Packers get the victory yesterday over the Minnesota Vikings, and there is an article out there talking about Matt LaFleur's record in the NFC North early in his career. In his first six seasons, 24-8, scorching, absolutely scorching, averaging just over one loss in the division per year, per season. But obviously, last year's 1-5 record was hanging over his head. You got to win the division. This is very simple, basic football, basic NFL. You got to do better than that in your division if you want to be a playoff team, if you want to make a deep run. So far, so good, Gabe. So far, so good. In the two games they have played in the division, Matt LaFleur's team is undefeated. But a big test ahead of them this week as they take on Detroit. And you were saying earlier in the show, maybe you get a slight advantage, to say nothing of the game, because I believe the Packers are underdogs in this game for the first time this season. To say nothing of that, maybe you get a slight advantage from the way that the Detroit game went down yesterday.
Yeah, they're playing in overtime. You know, trying to, you always hear, especially when you're playing that early game with Detroit. You know, it's one thing to play on Thursday, but every little bit helps trying to get your body ready, recovered. And when you're playing Thursday night, you have the extra 7 hours of when that game kicks off versus when it's going to kick off in Detroit coming up on Thursday with Thanksgiving. You always hear coaches talk about trying to get guys off their feet, trying to rest everyone as much as they humanly possibly can. And the defense playing as few snaps as they did yesterday for the Packers, the game being as short as it was for the Packers, I think is an advantage when the Lions game ultimately went into overtime. And their defense had to be out there a little bit longer after, you know, they were able to tie the game, force it, and go into overtime against the Giants at home yesterday. So it's a little thing, but I think those extra hits can certainly add up when you have such a quick turnaround, the quickest turnaround that anybody has all year.
I also think that this game did not exist in a vacuum. Obviously, the Packers recognize that they have this game coming up against the Lions on Thanksgiving. All eyeballs, right? It's the one game going on in the time slot. It's one of those things where everybody's going to be watching. Jordan Love is obviously dealing with a shoulder injury on his non-throwing arm. Josh Jacobs was out. Quay Walker was out. You have guys who are recovering from injury. You're trying to get your team healthy as you wrap up this final six games of the regular season. I think the game plan yesterday was exactly what it needed to be. But I got a lot of people, Gabe, reacting in the Carbless Talk and text line and on the YouTube stream trying to remind us that the Vikings are basically a steaming pile of you-know-what.
Yeah, so are some of the other teams that the Packers played. But they went out and they dominated. They did what they needed to do. I mean, how many other times have the Packers won by 17 points this year? Few and far between. Hasn't happened a ton for this squad. So yeah, that team is bad. What are you supposed to do? You go out and dominate them. And that's
which
exactly what the Packers
did in the second half,
yeah.
Right? I mean, especially in the second half. Because you maybe looked at that halftime score and went, I don't know, this feels a little too tight. This feels a little too close for comfort. But in the second half, the defense in particular went out and dominated, and you got what you needed to get from the offense. And oh, by the way, we mentioned very briefly the contributions from special teams. Obviously, McManus being healthy again, that seems to put that whole thing to bed, as long as he maintains his health. And then the special teams play that really turned things around, really gave the Packers momentum in the second half.
Yeah, and before I mentioned it, the Packers had three possessions in the first half. They scored on two of them. Had long drives on all three possessions. Vikings got a fourth possession. So that's why it kind of still felt close, because the Vikings were executing the game plan that's been successful against the Packers. Run the football, control the clock, and try to just shorten the game and muddy it all up. And the Packers, because of that turnover on special teams, were able to flip the game and really flip the script, because then they were able to build that double-digit lead. They were able to build the two-score lead, and now the Vikings have to try to throw the football to work their way back into it, because they don't want to shorten it. They want to have as many possessions as possible in that second half, which led to everything we saw with J.J. McCarthy.
Let's take a listen to the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers yesterday on the game plan to beat the Vikings.
I think the mindset always going into it is, like we say, winning the turnover battle. And I think we did that today. And then, like you said, you know, you get into it and defense is balling like that, coming up with stop after stop. You know, that mindset is just keep taking care of the ball, don't make mistakes, and, you know, just keep hammering away at it and keep putting together some good drives. And we did that.
How concerned are you, Gabe, about Jordan Love's shoulder? How concerned are you about that potentially limiting him and the offense going forward?
I don't think it's going to limit them when they need him to throw the football. But when you can protect him, like you could yesterday, by running the ball as much as they possibly could, especially against a front that likes to muddy up and try to disguise different pressures, and you've had trouble diagnosing those pressures as an offensive line unit all season long, and there have been free rushers at times, Yeah, you take the air out of football yesterday. You try to give him a little bit more time, less hits for him on that left shoulder, so it's not bothering him as much. But if he needs to get in a shootout against the Lions on Thursday, I'm not that concerned. But again, there is still a risk. Like, there's still a concern there. He's got a bad shoulder injury that he's playing through, and it can get worse to the point where he's unable to play, and that's not where you want to be either. So when you can limit those risks, you limit the risks the way that you did yesterday, so then when you play a tighter game potentially on Thursday against the Lions, he's still able to be out there and be as good as he possibly can be.
Let's see, comments coming in on the YouTube stream. Matthew weighing in saying that turnover was the breaking point, talking about special teams. And we did address earlier in the show how it was the most, I don't know if you want to say complete, but from a complementary football standpoint, where you got significant contributions from every element, from the defense, from the offense, and from the weefense, special teams, it did feel like that's the recipe. Again, we're not reinventing the wheel here. This is football 101. But if you can have a game like that where you at the end of the day are going, everybody came to play, everybody contributed in meaningful ways, it does feel significant. Pro Football Focus says the Packers only allowed 14 pressures in that game. To your point about Jordan sort of being in a protected space, being in a little bit of a bubble there and not having to worry so much about re-injuring.
Wait, 14 pressures yesterday?
Only allowed 14 pressures.
That's a lot when you only throw the ball 21 times.
Well,
hey, you're getting pressured. You're getting pressured two out of every three. That's not great. And that's why you run the football the way you did.
Let me take a look at those numbers again from Pro Football Focus. It's possible I maybe got them wrong. But yeah, I wrote down that the Packers only allowed 14 pressures. And to your point, 21. How many passing plays did they have?
They had 23 passing plays because Jordan got sacked on one, Malik threw one at the end of the game, and then Jordan had 21 attempts.
I'll take a look at that again.
Could that be the times they brought like extra men in the pass play versus like actually getting Jordan Love certainly was under pressure a few times, and sometimes there was times they were bringing like 5-6 people.
Yeah.
And the Packers held up pretty well. Chris Brooks, shout out to him.
Emmanuel Wilson had a couple nice blitz pickups yesterday, but I noticed that you, president of the Chris Brooks fan club, haven't really brought those up today, Joshy. Why are you being quiet about Emmanuel Wilson's blitz pickup ability when you're supposed to be Mr. Running Backs or can be good blockers?
What are you covering up
when it comes to Emmanuel Wilson?
I never said that. I said Chris Brooks is good and we should be using him more, which we have, and it worked. Wins, dubs. Chris Brooks leads to wins.
I'll have to look at that because I'm very interested in that. Everything I'm reading is talking about it in a complimentary fashion as far as the offensive line went. Packers offense only gave up 14 pressures, a low number in the context of an NFL game. But I do think it is worth what you're saying, worth looking at. When you only throw the ball 23 times, 14 pressures does feel like a significant percentage.
Yeah, and especially with Jordan. I mean, I don't think Malik got pressured because the one that he had was a little play-action boot, and there was really nobody around him. He just flipped it out there. So if Jordan Love's getting pressured two out of every three, that's bad. That's bad. That's not very good.
We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy as we continue to dive into those numbers, try to get that figured out. Jen, Gabe, and Chewy rolls on right after this. Stick around.
It is Victor Munder. It's brought to you by Callen from Kitchen and Bathroom Remodels to Infinity by Marvin Fiberglass Replacement Windows. Callen makes your home feel like a win. Request your consultation today at callcallen.com. Victory Monday also brought to you by National Liquor Mart, 16th and National in Milwaukee. Stock up on the best beer, liquor, seltzer, and spirit deals in town. Open 9-9 daily, your game day headquarters all season long. And of course, Victory Monday brought to us by our friends at Palermo's Pizza, Wisconsin's hometown pizza. Great, delicious brands like Palermo's, Connie's, Urban Pie, Scream It Sicilian. Palermo's has your game day covered. They've also got some deals on Stranger Things pizzas going on right now, with that coming out soon. Find Palermo's in your favorite local grocer's freezer.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
What's a click below dumb?
You. No.
Whoa. That's fine. Whoa. No, that's what I was getting at.
Good pop. Good pop.
That's, whoa. I know.
Unnecessary.
I'm not dumb. I'm one click below dumb. We need to find out what that word is.
Don't you want to be one click above dumb?
Oh, that's right. I'm one click above.
On 94.5 ESPN.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This month, BetterHelp is encouraging everyone to reach out, check on your friends, reconnect with your loved ones, and remind people in your life that you're there for them. And maybe you need some support as well. If that's the case, BetterHelp therapists can help you. They work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the United States. They do this initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. It's just a short questionnaire. It'll help identify your needs and your preferences. And then they let their 12 years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate get you to the right therapist. And if you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. They got a 4.9 out of 5, guys, on the App Store when it comes to reviews. That's pretty dang good. So if you find yourself in a situation where life is challenging, you're feeling stressed or overwhelmed, and you're looking for help, BetterHelp can help. Our clients get 10% off their first month by hitting #250. That's #250 and the keyword timeout. You just have to say it when you're prompted. That'll give you 10% off and will start you on your journey to better help with BetterHelp. Reaction continues rolling into the Packers' win over the Vikings. Huge team win, T in Pewaukee says. I would rather use Chris Brooks as a second or third back for a breather, but not on the first couple of drives of the game. Because McFly could figure that out. I guess he's saying that's a simplistic offense or something like that. Either way, Terry, very happy with the victory. We will continue talking about what this means for the division race and what the Packers need to do down the stretch here to make sure to keep putting separation between themselves and the other teams. But I do think that after we talk to Rob Domofsky, I want to talk about whether or not this type of victory where you run the ball effectively, not necessarily with Emmanuel Wilson, obviously, hopefully Josh Jacobs is back out there able to move the chains. But if Jordan Love continues to deal with this shoulder injury, if you can win with defense and a run game deep into the season, because conventional wisdom, Gabe, says that in the NFC North, when it's going to get cold and blustery and you can't necessarily rely on a passing game, running the ball and having a stout defense does feel like a recipe for success, but can you do that in 2025?
Yeah, I think you still can do it in 2025. I mean, the Packers were able to do it pretty successfully last year. The Ravens were able to do it pretty successfully a year ago, where they mixed the run game of Derrick Henry and the pass game of Lamar very, very well. I think that's something you still can do. Now, ultimately, you still need Jordan to be able to go out there and make plays. Like, no matter how well you run the football, you still need your quarterback to go out there and be able to sling it. If you just need an example, yesterday, if you paid attention at all to the Colts and Chiefs game, Daniel Jones, suddenly when he's asked to do things because the run game is shut down and teams are going, nope, you're not going to beat us, then you have to be able to go out there and be successful. But the way teams have been playing the Packers, early in the season it was, oh, Josh Jacobs isn't going to beat us. Oh, we don't need to have the extra man in the box to slow down that run game. If you can start running the ball efficiently against those light boxes, that's what's also going to open up a lot more things, because they'll finally have to bring down that eighth defender into the box, and that opens up things for Jordan Love in the passing game.
Look, if there is anybody out there who is hesitant to enjoy this victory, and we have seen a little bit of that in the Carbless Talk and Text Line and on the YouTube stream, it's because of how bad they think the Vikings are. And they're not sure if it can be a good indicator of the Packers' ability to win against better teams, whether that's Detroit or whether that's the Ravens or whether that's the Broncos, who are still on the Packers' schedule.
Other than the Rams, I don't know if there's a team in the NFC I can say that they're definitively better than the Green Bay Packers right now. It's all a muddled mess across the NFL. Like, nobody's playing particularly well. Nobody's playing great. You have a lot of these ugly games happening week in and week out. Every once in a while, you see somebody blowing somebody out. The Rams did it last night to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but it is a muddled mess across the NFL right now. And in the NFC, I think I can only say one team is definitively better than the Green Bay Packers.
And we're watching highlights right now up on GetUp on the televisions above us of the win last night by the Cowboys over the Eagles. To your point, so much parity in the NFC. So again, I like the Vikings game yesterday being a get-right game. I like that they played complimentary football. I like that Jordan Love, dealing with an injury that could have really hampered this offense, still found a way to get it done. And I like that Matt LaFleur let the game come to him, didn't overthink it, and was able to step on the throat of his opponent in the second half particularly and get the victory at home. 800-990-3776. Still taking your reaction all morning long. We have to take a break because we've got Rob Domofsky coming up next. We always like to get the insight from inside the locker room at 1265. He's going to bring that to us right after this.
With a dedicated Milwaukee team, Fifth Third Bank knows what success looks like. For 15 years, we've been serving businesses, organizations, and individuals in the area with a long-standing commitment to the healthcare and not-for-profit sectors. Whether it's expansion to commercial payments, Fifth Third offers a full suite of financial services and solutions to navigate your organization's complex needs. They've got a great team over there that's always going to be able to help you and your business out. So experience the difference with Fifth Third Bank. National Association. Custom solutions built around your goals. Member FDIC.
Josh, I love the intros, but man, that's last year's intro.
ESPN's number one source for green and gold information.
Cracking. He's cracking the lid.
We did this last time. You have to speak on the show for me to give you an intro.
You know what? You're right.
Our most musically inclined and bald guest.
I feel like a jerk. I really do. Like, that was terrible.
It's Rob Domofsky on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I see Rob fidgeting back there on the stream, on the YouTube stream. We got him? He's good?
He's going to be on the stream, but talking to us over the phone.
All right. That's kind of fun. 2025. Make it work. Rob Domofsky joining Jen, Gabe, and Chewy this morning as we continue celebrating a Packers victory yesterday, 23-6 over the Vikings. I know the people who were at the stadium yesterday have been telling us it was a great scene, it was a great game, and it was a great win. Rob, how should fans view the victory over the Vikings when we've talked about the numbers this morning? J.J. McCarthy, one of the worst starters ever, starting out his career as one of the worst to ever be under center. You could still be happy about the Packers and the way that they performed on Sunday, right?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, you can. Did you guys have Wildy on today? Do you have it?
No. Wildy is Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays for us. So we have not talked to Wildy yet.
All right.
Good. Why? Are you stealing material? Is that what's going on? Like, what are you worried about?
I am. I'm going to steal his material from TV show last night on WBAY. We do a little bit of a roundtable. It's for those not in the Green Bay market. It's hosted by Chris Roth on Channel 2. It's Jason, myself, Bill Huber, and Dave Schrader, the sports director from WBAY. And his first topic of conversation on the show was this Jeff Hafley or J.J. McCarthy? You know, which one was more responsible for this? And Wildy just, I mean, he never takes a stand on anything. And he went full J.J. McCarthy on this. So, I mean, look, you can feel great about it, but they're not playing J.J. McCarthy next week this coming week in Detroit. They certainly wouldn't be playing J.J. McCarthy if they played the Rams in the playoffs after what we watched last night. It's a good question, but I do think this was as much J.J. McCarthy's ineptness as it was the Packers, but so what, right? Like, it still counts the same.
Yeah, still a win, and you feel good going into Detroit for that. What did you make of Emmanuel Wilson and the Packers just basically saying, because of J.J. McCarthy, we're taking the air out of the football and we're not going to put Jordan Love and his separated left shoulder at any sort of risk?
Yeah, except the hardest part for him was they handed off so many times and he had to do it with his other arm, which was, you know, risky.
The backhand handoff, yeah, because it's not a secure way to hand off the ball, Rob.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's like taking a 9-iron and turning it around and trying to hit left-handed out from behind a tree, you know, a punch out sideways. But the thing about, and I think I can't remember if I told you this or we talked about this on one of the other shows, Emmanuel Wilson had 502 yards rushing last year. It's not like he had nothing. 502 yards was pretty darn good. It just got lost in the the shadow of Josh Jacobs' 1,300 yard, 15 touchdown season. So I guess I'm not totally surprised by this. There were a few things about the running game that surprised me. It was a grinded out 107 yards or whatever it was. They didn't have a run longer than 13 yards. Wilson did not. But it also we also saw a change on the offensive line, Gabe, with Anthony Belton. It was a rotation at right guard with Jordan Morgan the first couple of series. And then the rest of the game, it was Anthony Belton all the way. And I know they'll say, oh, Jordan Morgan didn't get benched, because they never use that word, but he got benched. And Anthony Belton provides a little bit more physicality in the run game, and at least did last night.
Are they a better team if Belton takes all the snaps when healthy at right guard?
Sure seems like it, I would say. I mean, it's the Jordan Morgan right guard experiment should be over. They should let him be the backup left tackle for the rest of this year. And then when they don't sign Rashid Walker, let him compete for the starting left tackle job next year.
We were talking earlier, Rob, speaking of the offensive line, and I was telling Gabe that I was reading online. Pro Football Focus said the Packers only allowed 14 pressures. And Gabe goes, but they only had 21 passes. So how would you assess the pressure, if you will, that Jordan Love was under yesterday?
Yeah, wow, I hadn't seen that. That is interesting.
Because again, the way it was structured in the article I was reading was they only allowed 14 pressures, and as Gabe mentioned, in the context of a normal NFL game, that would be good. But they only threw the ball 20 plus times.
If you're under pressure two out of every three times, that quarterback is, I believe, the technical term, running for his life.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I hadn't seen that. I don't. That must be behind the Pro Football Focus paywall. I don't have that. I don't have that subscription. But the everybody defines pressures a little different, Jen. But that's obviously not ideal. They did so little in the passing game yesterday, other than a few throws to Christian Watson, that I didn't really pay that close attention to it. I haven't rewatched the game yet. I'm not overly concerned about it at this point.
So now when we kind of going forward to this Lions game, how much of an advantage is it for the Packers to have as short of a game as they did yesterday, Rob? I mean, that game was over so fast.
Yeah.
And then the Lions end up playing overtime against the Giants. Is that an advantage when you have the quickest turnaround of the NFL season playing at noon on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I talked to somebody last week about this whole Thanksgiving thing, and we were just talking about NFL scheduling, and this person said to me that they think the Lions, Cowboys, and whoever hosts the night game should always have to play on the road before Thanksgiving, just to try to even it out a little bit. And obviously the Lions were at home, right, yesterday?
So, Lions were at home. Cowboys were at home.
Cowboys were at home. I don't even know who the night game is. But, yeah, so that obviously is not in play this week. However, it is an interesting point you make. And, how many plays did the Vikings run on offense? Like, less than – I posted the snap counts earlier. I think it was, 44
offensive plays.
Yeah. So, the defense, the Packers defense, was not taxed overly, greatly. 65, I think, offensive plays for the Packers. But like you said, so much running that your skill position guys didn't take a lot of hits. Obviously, they're blocking on run plays all the time. I think, you came out of this game with one, sort of significant concerning injury, Keyshawn. And that's Keyshawn Nixon. And, Matt LaFleur said yesterday that, he didn't think it's long-term, but this week could be a concern. And, I mean, every stinger is different. He had a stinger in the game. Quay Walker had a stinger in the game the previous week and did not play this week. So, I mean, yeah, there's great concern there. I mean, we're one snap away or one injury away from seeing Bo Melton play cornerback, which – quite frankly, we talked so much about it, we might as well see it for a little bit. But I'm sure Packers fans.
Let's put him out there. He's played so many offensive snaps at this point. Yeah. Let's see him play defense.
Yeah, no, I'm sure Packers fans, would rather that not happen, especially against the Lions offense. But, I do think that's I don't want to say advantage for the Packers, because I don't think there's any advantage to playing on the road on Thanksgiving on a short week, but it can't hurt.
Rob Domofsky hanging out with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, as he does each and every Monday during the season. Okay, we were talking about this very briefly before we got on with you, this idea that if they had to be a run-first team, which Joshy thinks that Matt LaFleur would prefer to be for whatever reason, and a defensive-minded team, is that a recipe for success, particularly in the playoffs? Or do you still need to be able to throw the ball with efficiency and with accuracy?
I think it just depends on who you're playing, Jen. I don't think it's necessarily, this is built for the playoffs or it's not built for the playoffs. It's the matchup, right? Like, what kind of matchup are you getting? If you're playing the Rams and you can get a lead, it's a great recipe, because you know, maybe you take, well, I guess you don't want them throwing the ball either, but make that play from behind a little bit. Now I think about the Rams, you know, watching them a little bit last night. How do you beat them? But I guess it's if you want to slow the game down, it's a possible recipe for success in a playoff. I do think that it shows, you know, maybe this team can win different ways, which sometimes you have to do in the playoffs. You know, and I thought about this, you know, as Zane Anderson was shoving the guy into the ball and recovering the fumble. Like, it's not just the Packers special teams that screw up all the time. Maybe you make a special teams play and it flips the game your way, and they finally did for a change. So I don't think there's necessarily one way to win in the playoffs. The thing I thought was encouraging, I guess, is that you won without, you know, one of your best offensive players, and that's Josh Jacobs. So, you know, and they're obviously without one of their other best offensive players for the rest of the year with Tucker Kraft. So finding ways to win, I think, is important. I don't know that there's anybody in the NFC that scares you, but I also think that they can lose to just about any of these teams too.
How much growth have you seen out of Christian Watson in the five games he's played this year?
Yeah, I mean, two things, Gabe. One, like, he's catching the ball really well. You know, and I know he had, you know, he may have been unfairly labeled as a drop guy because he had some problems early, but that was his reputation coming out of college. And, you know, two, I mean, and just most importantly, he's just held up. He's durable. He's held up. He's played every position on the field. He's been in the slot. He's been outside. He's been in motion. So, yeah, I just think, you know, try to find a way to get him the ball a little bit more. Yesterday, obviously, we talked about how their game plan was different. But I do think he's becoming the go-to guy, maybe even a little bit more than Romeo Doubs.
So if you had to do your perfect offense, and we've talked a little bit about Watson this morning and just how the growth you have seen from him as a talent, how would you structure that passing offense? Would you be giving Watson the bulk of the targets? Would it then go to Jaden Reed? Like, how do you want to see it shake out? Because Joshy said last week he's over the Romeo Doubs experiment.
Yeah, I think I would go to Romeo Doubs on third down. If it's third and six and you need to run a 7-yard slant, like, that Romeo Doubs is your guy, and I would feed him all the time on that. I would try to get Christian Watson as involved as possible. And then let's see what Jaden Reed can give you when he comes back. I don't think he's going to play this week. But I think next week against Chicago or even Denver, possibly at the latest, would be the time we see him coming back. And that could be a game changer. I mean, it really could, because we know, I mean, he's their leading receiver the last couple of years. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how that happens. But at this point, you know, Christian Watson seems to be the guy.
I know it wasn't intended as such. Were you by Micah Parsons in the locker room when he was talking yesterday? Did you hear what he had to say?
I camped out there, gave it, and this is just one of the strangest things that's ever happened to me in 29 years covering the game. I talked to one person after the game, and it was him. I went over there right away, and there was a huge gathering, and I thought, well, I can't leave now because if I leave, I'm going to lose my spot. And he had to do a rehab treatment thing, and he took the whole locker room. So I talked to one guy. I was front and center. So if I don't remember what he said, then I'm in real trouble.
So
that's a long way of answering your question. And I think I know where you're going. I think I know where you're going with the 10 sack thing. Is that where you're going?
So, yeah, he talked about 10 sacks and how that's the baseline for him. Like, he's excited that he got 10 sacks, minimum. But he looks at it as being that's the minimum, you know, and that's like 1,000 yards for him. And him and CeeDee Lamb used to have. I know it's not intended, but it kind of seems like a shot at somebody like Rashawn Gary, who's getting paid a lot of money and has never had a 10-sack season.
Well, and did you see, hopefully you follow him because it's an entertaining follow, his brother Terrence Parsons on Twitter. Someone put up that it's the first time in 6 years that they've had a double-digit sack guy, and he just couldn't believe. He was like, that's crazy. You know, his brother was just and he even used the laughing my, you know what, off emoji, like making fun of the Packers. And yeah, whether intentional or not, that's making fun of Rashawn Gary. And I mean, the facts are the facts, right? He's never had a 10 sack season. That's just, and they're paying him a lot of money. It goes into the whole thing we talked about on the pregame show with he's never been a high snap guy. Well, he's never been a high sack guy either, apparently.
Seems like a bad combination. Seems like a poor
especially
combination.
Especially one that you're drafted in the first round and paying, you know, $20 some million.
Rob, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Your cell phone and stream combination worked out just fine today, so we appreciate you making it work.
We'll try to get this figured out.
Good stuff, Rob. We'll talk to you again soon.
It's always good to see your beautiful face on the stream, bud.
He just hung up on us. Saw him do it on the stream.
That's fair. It is a Victory Monday. It's brought to you by National Liquor Mart, 16th National in Milwaukee. Stock up on the best beer, liquor, seltzer, and spirit deals in town. Open 9 to 9 daily. Your game day headquarters all season long. Victory Monday also brought to you by Callen, from kitchen and bathroom remodels to Infinity by Marvin fiberglass replacement windows. Callen makes your home feel like a win. Request your consultation today. Call Callen.com. And Victory Monday brought to you by Palermo's Pizza, Wisconsin's hometown pizza, with delicious brands like Palermo's, Connie's, Urban Pie, and Screamin' Sicilian. Palermo's has your game day covered. Find Palermo's in your local grocer's freezer.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Josh said it's garbage.
I'm so glad that Josh is getting a front row seat.
He said it's it doesn't work.
Chewy,
am I right or wrong?
We call that a setup in the biz.
On 94.5 ESPN.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This month, BetterHelp is encouraging everyone to reach out, check in on your friends, reconnect with loved ones, and remind the people in your life that you are there. And if you find yourself struggling, things are getting challenging, feeling stuck, BetterHelp can help. Our listeners get 10% off their first month. Just call #250. Say the keyword timeout. That's #250 with the keyword timeout, because we are all better with help. Back here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, we were just talking with Rob Domofsky, and we mentioned that J.J. McCarthy is having one of his worst starter seasons ever. And I got a little pushback on the YouTube stream. Someone said, well, that feels extreme. Joshy, can you cue up a little music for us here? I just want to give you a little insight as to how bad J.J. McCarthy has been since he took over as starter for the Vikings. He's thrown an interception in each of his first six career games, extending his own Vikings record and tying DeShone Kizer for third longest streak
Packers
by
legend.
Any quarterback in the last 20 seasons. Gabe, you got anything to add to this?
When eliminating dropbacks with quick pressures under 2.5 seconds, J.J. McCarthy's performance against the Packers this week ranked 344th out of 346 quarterback performances this year in EPA per dropback.
Feels good, feels good. 71 quarterbacks have made their first six career starts in the last 10 seasons. McCarthy ranks near the bottom of that group in virtually every important quarterback category. I said 71, right? He ranks 66th in passing yards. He ranks 67th in completion percentage. He ranks 67th in total QBR. He ranks 69th in interceptions.
Are we done? Because I got one more.
Is this the one?
EPA per dropback?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. J.J. McCarthy now ranks 851st out of 852 in EPA per dropback among qualified passers since 2000 per True Media. The only player below McCarthy, so who would be 852 on that list?
I was very curious.
Jamarcus Russell.
Oh. Jamarcus Russell, very good quarterback.
He got paid.
So if you were watching J.J. McCarthy yesterday, and you said this is one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen, you'd be accurate. You weren't exaggerating.
The statistics back it up. But anyway, for people who were like, it wasn't that bad, it really was. It was really that bad.
Probably worse than you
thought. And if you're looking long-term, gang, long-term, that's the Vikings quarterback for the foreseeable future.
They could always Josh Rosen him.
That's true. They certainly could. Will the Couch will continue breaking down the victory. Packers over the Vikings. It's a Victory Monday on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee.